So we give ourselves to the priority of train, train, train. We just train all the time. And that's part of my responsibility as a pastor, is to equip and train people for the work of service. I noticed today in the paper, local paper, this headline. It says, do we trust social media? You see the answer. I was wondering, is the Bible social media? And perhaps you can weigh in on the matter. I'm not sure if it fits that way. Maybe it has to be digital or on the internet for it to become social media. But I had this thought that that what we do here on Sunday morning is give good news. It's not fake. It's stuff that you can trust. The people who are up here are well trained. They're highly committed, deeply devoted. You know them. You trust them. And it's our responsibility to give good news to the poor, to the person who's alone, and to the stranger. We also give bad news to the rich who don't help the poor, to the powerful who don't use their power for abusive purposes. But for those of us who are followers of Christ, we bring good news. And there is an event that happened here a couple weeks ago, happened right here in front of this pulpit, where a woman who was very high on drugs, as you saw with your own eyes, was being very disruptive. I gave her a chance for a few minutes to settle down. We tried to work with her, because we're open, our doors are open. But it became too distracting. And so I had to come up here, grab her by the arm, and how can I say this and still look good? I had to drag her out of the sanctuary. Okay? Escort, there's the... Thank you. Well, that has that caused considerable discussion, because we are a downtown church, aren't we? We have people sleeping here every night. Sometimes when we have meetings and we open the doors, we have to step over people in order to get back to our cars. But so I had a discussion with a... man who was who grew up in this church and who is now a police officer, and I ran the scenario by him, and he said, you know, here's what I would have done. And he had incredible insights. And so elders, deacons, ushers, and anybody else who is open, I would like for you to join me on Tuesday night at 6 o'clock for pizza in the fireside room. And that police officer is going to share with us some ideas on how to deal with church safety. You know, in the last couple of years, a bunch of people in churches have been killed by active shooters. And so we want to train ourselves as to what to do when those situations come up again. And by the way, we have a bunch of preschool parents here and grandparents. Thank you for coming. Thank you for trusting us with your children. I want to say that when we had your children up here, they were not just singing precious songs, but we had them up here on purpose. And that is that we want to train them how to stand alone and speak and address a bunch of adults. We want to train them to do that. And so everything we do around here is for the purpose of introducing and having Jesus Christ become the Lord, the Savior of our lives, and that we become more and more effective followers. It's been a few minutes with these ministry reports that you heard the passage. I'm going to ask Anne if she would come back and read the passage to us again. And I want you to listen carefully to some of the key words in here. Key words like Jesus saying, "Let us go." And then the response of one of the disciples who said, "Don't you care?" Listen for those words as we hear the passage again.
That day, when evening came, he said to his disciples, "Let's go over to the other side." Leaving the crowd behind, they took him along just as he was in the boat. There were other boats with him. A furious squall came up, and the waves broke over the boat so that it was nearly swamped. Jesus was in the stern, sleeping on a cushion. The disciples woke him and said to him, "Teacher, don't you care if we drown?" He got up, rebuked the wind, and said to the waves, "Quiet, be still." The wind died down, and it was completely calm. He said to his disciples, "Why are you so afraid? Do you still have no faith?" They were terrified and asked each other, "Who is this? Even the wind and the waves obey him."
Thank you. A couple of things I want to draw your attention to in this passage. And if you have your Bibles, please turn to that Mark chapter 4, verse 35. Page 1558. First thing that comes to my mind, it says, that day when evening came, he said to his disciples, "Let's go. Let's go over to the other side." It's not clear as to what he had in mind, but he said, "Let's go." Now, sometimes when we follow Jesus, we don't know where he's going to lead us, but he says, "Go," and like good troopers, like followers, like disciples, disciplined followers of Jesus, we follow, we go. Well, sometimes he leads us into a storm. Now, I wish he would not always do that. And he doesn't always do that. But sometimes we wind up in a storm, and I get so caught up in the storm that I forget that it was Jesus who led me or us into that storm. You know, there are all sorts of storms that come to us. There are financial storms, physical storms. Has any doctor ever told you you have cancer or some other dreaded condition? Some of you are having emotional, relational storms right now. There are some storms that we go through, and other people can see it. And they're very supportive. They're comforting. You can count on this body here to come alongside and lay hands on you and tell you that the hand of God is on you. There are some storms that are secret. And as a pastor, I happen to know many of the secret storms that you're going through. Storms that nobody else knows about. But there's still storms. And those are particularly painful because you don't feel comfortable putting it out there. It might even be embarrassing. And you don't want necessarily draw attention to yourself. There are people sometimes who have a storm that is kind of a paradox. Some people might envy you for having a nice car, but the storm going on behind the scene is that you're two payments behind paying for the car. Or perhaps you've gotten a new position and people are jealous or envious of you getting that new position, but they don't know that with that new position you quit having a good night's sleep. Job was one of those people for whom life was really good. And then all of a sudden, because of a wager between God and Satan, his life pivoted and he lost it all. And in that book, Job has this comment. He says, when God acts on the left, I cannot see him. When God turns to the right, I cannot see him. We, and this happens to me, when we buy into the notion that that if God is really with us, that somehow or another the storm should go away. And many storms do, because we settle up on our magnetic north and we decide that we're going to say yes and no to certain things. And some storms do settle down. The fact is, Jesus sends us into some storms. And I've often wondered why, and I have an idea. Actually, it's not an idea. I have a conviction. That God sends us into some storms to do a couple things. One is to expose our insides, to reveal the limits of our trust and faith. The other reason, or another reason, that Jesus sends us into storms is to show us that Jesus is with us even in the storms. Now, I've told you stories in the past of storms that I've been in, some of the deployments that I've been on. One I haven't told you about was when I was in the Superdome during Katrina. It was so hazardous, so horrible, that I remember feeling the absence of God in my life. I normally feel the presence of God in my life, but not in the Superdome. Not when the senses were overwhelmed with dead and dying and wounded people, with stench and sewage all over the place. I could not feel the presence of God, and I was alarmed at first. I said, "Jesus, where are you?" And in fact, I remember complaining to Jesus. I said, "God, I believe you led me here. Now what's the deal that you've abandoned me here?" Well, he had not done that. Jesus had not done that. He had not abandoned me. It's just that my sensory system was overloaded with the traumas that I saw in front of me, that I couldn't discern spiritually what was going on inside of my own life. Sometimes we are moving nicely along in our discipleship with Jesus, and our finances turn, and our house is being foreclosed on. That happened to my son. He was doing very well, and then he lost his home. There are some people who are in relationships, they're following Jesus well, and the relationship, perhaps with their children, has gone sideways. It's a storm. Well, when a storm is occurring, don't be surprised if you cannot see God. Do not be surprised if you feel alone, or even that Jesus has abandoned you. You remember Jesus on the cross when he was going through that personal storm. He said, "My God, my God, why have you..." You remember the next word? He felt it. You know, Jesus, the scriptures tell us that we walk by faith and not by sight. You know, if you really want to see God at work in your life, then get into trouble. You'll see it. You know, we believe that God visits us in our praise. When we were singing, God was here. And God inhabits our praises. But if you really want to know where God lives in trouble. That's where God is most alive, most real, most present, most active. He's very present to help in time of trouble. David wrote in Psalm 18, "The cords of death were entangling me and pulling me down into the abyss, and all I saw around me was darkness. Little did I know that God had come from heaven and had clothed himself in darkness. Folks, whenever it seems dark to you, God is never so close, even though our senses cannot see it. We have a video that I'd like to show, but it's going to push us past our regular closing time. Would you give me permission to show this, because I believe it has a very powerful message. Watch the monitor, please.
A couple years ago, I was with my family, and we were spending some time in this cabin in the woods on the edge of this remote lake. And I mean, we were deep in the middle of nowhere. And one morning, my son Trace and I, we woke up and set out to take a walk around the lake. It was one of those mornings, like not a cloud in the sky, and the birds are singing, and my son Trace, he's about a little over a year old at the time. And so he's making all these little chirps and squawks that one-year-old boys make. And I had him in one of those hiking backpacks where he rode back here. So as I walk along, I can hear him making all his noises. And so we head out through the woods to walk around the lake. And it's just one of those, you ever have those moments, like, if you could just freeze them? Just so beautiful. And we get to the other side of the lake, and we're exactly at the halfway point. We're the farthest possible point from the cabin, and we're rounding the bend to head back, and I look up and I notice clouds. And then it starts to rain. It always rains, doesn't it? It's interesting because the scriptures say all sorts of things about rain and storms. When Jesus is teaching about what it means to live like the fullness of life in his kingdom, when Jesus speaks of it, he speaks of two different people. He speaks of a person who builds their house on sand, someone who chooses to reject his teachings, and someone who builds their life, their house on rock, who chooses to build their life on Jesus' teachings. And then the metaphor he uses is that of a storm that comes, and the person who rejects his teachings and his truth, essentially the house built on sand just gets destroyed, but the house that's built on rock stands. So this idea, Jesus says, when the rains come, it's not like they might, they do. It rains in our lives a lot. At first, there's a drop here and a drop there, and so I put Trace's hood over his head. But what I didn't know was that he pulled it off. And so gradually the drops, they get bigger and bigger, and they fall faster and faster. And in no time, it is pouring. I mean, the kind of rain that just soaks, it plasters your hair against your head, and the kind that just drenches your clothing. And at first, Trace, the thunder and the lightning, he's okay, but as it picks up and it gets louder and louder and the wind becomes more intense and the trees start to shake, Trace becomes more and more agitated. I can feel him, like, on my back. And at first he starts to whimper, and then he lets out kind of a little shout here and there, but in no time, Trace is shrieking at the top of his lungs. I mean, the wind is blowing, it's thunder and lightning, and we are just getting plastered with this heavy rain, and the trees are no longer providing any shelter. And Trace, just from like deep in his being, starts to yell and cry so loudly and with such passion and terror in his voice. It's interesting, because if you take like the word cry and you search the scriptures, you find this word comes up over and over again. Like even the book of Psalms, just the book of Psalms, if you're like to start reading through, it speaks over and over and over again of crying. Of crying out to God. And God says these amazing things, like he says, when you cry out to me, I listen. He even says, I cannot ignore the cry of somebody who's afflicted. It's like if I'm hurting, lost, soaking wet, scared, confused, God says, you cry out and I hear. God even says that when you cry, he's close to the brokenhearted. He's close to those who cry out and admit they're scared, lost, soaking wet, and confused. See, there is this false, twisted idea out there among religious people that somehow you got to have it all together to have a relationship with God. That like somehow God's only looking for people who have no problems and have it all nailed down and can put on like the happy face all the time. And yet the scriptures speak directly against this kind of thinking. I mean, Jesus is even just straight ahead and he says, come to me, all you who are weary and heavy laden. I mean, the essence of salvation is crying out to God and admitting I don't have it all together. It's admitting I am lost, I am hurting, and this sinful nature that I carry around with me has really screwed things up for me. And God, if you don't show me the way home, if you don't fix things, if you don't step in, I am dying here. And this church, this kind of thinking is all throughout the scriptures. It's over and over again. God says to us, when you come to me with all your junk. Come to me with your problems. Come to me all screwed up, all messed up. Let me take care of it. Jesus even sets out looking for people. He even says this. He says, I'm not looking for the healthy. I came for the sick. It's interesting if you think about the storm from Trace's perspective. For Trace, the storm is his reality. He sees nothing else. The lightning and the thunder and the trees swaying and the raindrops and the water just dripping off him. It's all he knows. He sees no reality beyond this storm. What Trace doesn't realize is that as his dad, I would do anything to get him home. So at this point, Trace is shrieking at the top of his lungs in stereo right behind my head. And I stop and I kneel down and I take him out of the pack and I pull him close to my chest and I wrap my arms around him and I hold him so tightly up against my heart. And for the last mile of our walk, the entire time I bend over and I whisper into his ear over and over again, I love you, buddy. We're gonna make it. Dad knows the way home. We're gonna make it. I love you, buddy. And over and over and over again, through the storm, I carry him home, clutched tightly against my chest, whispering,